Right, Charlotte, welcome to the John Colby podcast. This is episode 84. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Really well, really, really well. Good. So for everybody listening, we have Charlotte Spivey. Charlotte, you help people move from a place of depression, panic attack and anxiety into a place that's filled with wellness and happiness.
That's right.
Oh, incredible.
Yes, love doing it. Do it often.
How long have you been doing it now?
I've been using hypnotherapy and meditation for about 15 or 16 years now, but I trained and I have been working with clients for about 9 years now.
Brilliant. So you're a clinical hypnotherapist. What does that actually mean? What's a clinical hypnotherapist?
Clinical hypnotherapist, well, hypnotherapy is an alternative medicine. So it's helping people move into a more focused state of awareness to allow us to make positive suggestions, to allow people to change their beliefs, their behaviours, maybe habits. So, you know, often mental illness becomes quite habitual. We almost don't know how to stop these thoughts from ruminating. Yet when we move somebody into hypnosis, we can actually access that area of the mind to help people start uncovering their mental illness. Sure. It isn't what you see on the TV. It is not, you know, click your fingers back in the room.
It's not Paul McKenna.
Oh, Paul McKenna does some really good stuff with mental illness, but the stuff that you see on the TV where it's clicking your fingers, people are completely unconscious and unaware. It is not that. It's therapeutic. It's beautiful. Sure. It's safe.
Sure. So, I mean, how does that differ from TV hypnosis, such as like when Paul McKenna used to do it on TV, or the likes of Devin Brown, who's on TV?
Yeah, I don't even know how to do what they do. I only know how to move somebody or care for somebody in a therapeutic session where we are taking care of them mentally and perhaps physically if there's pain involved. Sure. I don't know how they do that.
Sure. Are they doing it, do you think, or is it staged for TV?
Well, when I watched a program, they were all trying to stay in hypnosis to win 30 grand. I was like, well, I'd do that for 30 grand. I could pretend to be hypnotized as well.
I see. So what is hypnosis then? So if you had to kind of summarize it as a term, what really is hypnosis? Are you asleep? Are you awake? Are you, like, what's going on?
You're a bit of both. You know, if you meditate, you can get yourself into a deeper state of awareness, can't you? Where you can really access deeper feelings, deeper thoughts. Everybody's different. So I have people say to me all the time, oh yeah, I was hypnotized once, they couldn't do it. They had to give up after an hour and a half or 2 hours. And I'm like, but that's not how it works. You have to grow your ability to go into hypnosis or go into meditation. It doesn't happen in the first instance. So yeah. So somebody that's not being able to go into hypnosis the first time might go in the second or third. Mm-hmm. Everybody has different levels of what hypnosis is for them. So some clients go really deep into hypnosis, whereas others stay very light. It doesn't mean that the treatment won't work. Everybody's different, and you have to treat each client that sits in that chair completely independently, because their state will be so different.
Of course. And why is that?
Well, everybody's different, aren't they? Some people hold themselves out. So often people come in for hypnotherapy, they're quite skeptical, they might be afraid, they don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They've often seen TV and they think they're going to be completely zonked out of control. And when they realise after the first session that that's not what it is at all, they then begin to let themselves go.
Sure. I mean, you said that everybody's different, but are we really that different? You know, we all come from the same place. We've all come from the same source energy. We've all come from a similar kind of bringing. Do you know, like, are we really that different and unique, or are we really just all running on our own blueprints that's pretty much the same as somebody else's, but it's just us that's living it?
Well, therapeutically, yes, we are all different because we've all got different fears. We've all got different worries. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody might be quite relaxed about coming and having hypnosis and sort of, or they've had it before and they know what it's going to be like. Somebody can, you know, people are incredibly concerned sometimes when they come because they don't know what's going to happen, but they want something to change. They're desperate for something to change. Mm-hmm. And so the beginning of their treatment is more challenging for them to go into hypnosis. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when everybody comes, everybody's different. You go through treatment with them and you begin to understand what they are like, how they go into hypnosis and what works for them. Some people are more visual. People can't visualize things. They're going to really struggle to use visual hypnosis. So you use more audio hypnosis or, you know, physical relaxations like scrunch your hand up, relax it, scrunch your hand up, relax it. So you've got to treat everybody completely independently. We have all come from the same stardust, yes, but with hypnosis, you know, we are all a bit different.
Sure. So we are different. Do people have the same challenges though? Do you know, so like the people that you work with, the people that you treat and people as a whole, does the problems and the mental illness issues and all the different issues that we can work through, are they all driven through the same thing?
No, everybody has different things. Anxiety and depression presents itself in very similar ways, though. I think having worked with it, specialising for 9 years, uh-huh. you begin to understand how it works, and so you begin to understand how to undo it. Uh-huh. And so that stage becomes different, but everybody comes with a different background story as to how they've ended up with anxiety, panic attacks, or depression.
Sure. And so for the clarity, because like you said, they present themselves in the same way, so to just to add some clarity to people that's listening, watching, tuning into this kind of stuff, like, what is anxiety? Is it that they're worried about something, and is depression because they're holding on to something?
Yeah, well, we in therapy we often say if you're depressed, you're living in the past. If you're anxious, you're living in the future.
Yes.
You know, when we're depressed, we're often sort of ruminating over what happened in the past, mm-hmm. the things that hurt. When we're anxious, we're often anxious about what's going to happen.
Sure.
I'm going out for a meal. Sure. I'm really nervous. Sure. You know, what if this happens and that happens, and we start basing our life around fear. And mm-hmm. Jack Canfield says, you know, fear is fantasized events appearing real. And that's so true, because people will come in and they'll say, I'm so anxious about this happening. And we're like, so what evidence have you got that that's going to happen? And they're like, oh, none. Mm-hmm. So it's quite interesting just to unwind and unravel that fear that surrounds the anxiety.
And what's causing it?
Panic. Pardon?
What's causing it? That fear?
Yeah.
Like, what is it that's usually causing it? You know, like, so like, take somebody who's anxious and they've got they're worrying about things that's going to happen that might never happen, that more times than not never do happen. But like, what's the thing that's driving that? Is it a learned behavior, or is it something that's they've experienced? Is it a mixture of the two? Like, what usually is the cause?
Yeah. Well, it's usually a mixture of the two. So if something's happened, but it might not be as bad as what they then begin to fear is going to happen again. So one of the big things that I deal with is people going out for meals and they don't feel very well when they're going out for a meal. So that's quite a common thing to happen. So people start putting off going out for meals with family and friends, and they might have felt a little unwell, or something might have happened in a meal they went out for. But then that fear really grows into a lot more and becomes something that they then think about a lot, and it becomes quite high anxiety.
Really? So going out for meals is something that people struggle with.
Yeah.
I can tell you that's something I definitely don't struggle with.
I know.
I have no issues with going out for food at all.
But for some people, it's a really massive thing for them. And but it's often accompanied with a panic attack. Panic attacks are very physical. You know, people often end up in hospital thinking they're having a heart attack. They're not physical because of the actual physical symptoms.
Yeah.
And, you know, panic attacks are really helped by using hypnotherapy.
Sure.
So, you know, it's the fear of having the physical symptoms of the anxiety which leads to panic attacks.
So like in terms of the panic attacks, I mean, what's actually happening there? So why is the body doing this? Like what's the purpose of it? Like what's it trying to protect it? Is it like what's going on?
Yeah, it's a fight or flight. So, you know, the most common way to explain fight or flight in a panic attack is, you know, in the olden days when we used to have to run away from a tiger because it was going to eat us, we'd get all this adrenaline running around our body that we'd zoom and we'd run. And so when we ran, we used all this energy that goes around our body and we get to safety. Mm-hmm. In modern society, there are no lions or tigers that we have to run away from. So when that fear approaches us, you know, let's take the going out for a meal example. When that fear approaches us, we're going out for a meal and we start getting these physical symptoms. Those physical symptoms, you know, we do probably want to run away, but they're all inside our body. So the adrenaline's just racing around the body.
Sure.
You know, it creates a lot of physical symptoms. And the body has got no way of getting rid of that energy and that and the adrenaline.
So
it's in us and we're just sat in it and it feels really bad.
Right.
So it's sort of learning how to do that. And people become very afraid of panic attacks. They are scary. I used to have them myself.
Sure.
But once you realise that actually we can manage these and we can actually get rid of them, you know, clients get a lot better.
Awesome.
Then they can go out for meals.
Good. So, I mean, in terms of that, so you've got fight or flight, but there's a third one as well. There's freeze, isn't there, as well?
Yeah, some people do that. Some people get other physical symptoms. I don't like mentioning the symptoms as much to people because people like to go, oh, I'm going to have that symptom as well.
Yeah.
So there are symptoms that people will get where they literally just can't do anything, they can't move, they can't speak, everything seizes up.
I've seen it in a few people where they've not frozen in the sense of they've not been able to move, but for example, they're in a position where finances are stretched, they've got no money, they know they should be doing some level of activity, they know they should be doing something, but they do nothing. And they don't physically freeze, but they freeze in terms of the action that they take. They don't do anything. They don't make the calls. They don't go to the meetings. They don't turn up. And they've just literally got themselves into that state where they're just completely frozen as well. Is that something similar in terms of the kind of stuff that you would deal with and help?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a bit different. But yeah, definitely. Because I think sometimes we get overwhelmed by life, don't we? There's so much going on and there's so much expected of us, you know, to be doing things, to have this, you know, you've got to have it all, you've got to be successful. And people get very overwhelmed by stuff. And sometimes they need to learn to cut back. They need to take out of their life what isn't working for them or what is detrimental to their health and well-being. Sure. You know, if you've got yourself into a position of that, you really do need to start looking at what you can do. People trunk up. They take this massive thing and they're like, okay, I've got all of this to do. It's so overwhelming, I can't do it. But then we just need to chunk down a little bit. Okay, let's do 15 minutes of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's here and there. And then it becomes more manageable.
Sure. And I think the problem is that, I mean, like I remember reading a few months ago now that somebody who was related to someone I grew up with, only young, they've just taken their own life, and it was covered in the press and the papers and stuff, and it was all finance related. And I think that's again another example of the fact that they've got themselves into a position where they feel helpless, and they saw that as the only way. So I don't think they were in a situation where they was either fighting or flying, they were just, I'm frozen, you know, there's nothing else I can do. And I think that a lot of people go through that because it's tough, isn't it, for them to talk. It's tough for people to open up and share their issues and challenges. And I suppose for yourself, you know, you're in a very privileged place of serving people who come to you to help, who's looking for help, really.
Yeah, I think that's just a massive thing at the moment. Like I said a bit ago, there is such a huge pressure on people to be seen as successful when really we don't know, you know, what is success? We've lost the sight of what really matters.
Yep.
Money is never worth taking your life for it.
No, of course not.
Financial difficulties in the past, and you know, it's money. There's nothing more important than staying alive, staying well for yourself, for your friends, for your family.
Of course.
And because once you die, it's everybody else that's left. You know, I was in a very suicidal place 15 years ago. And
tell us about that. I mean, this is one of the things I've got down to ask you. So, like, mental illness yourself, you said that, you know, you went through a stage where you went from feeling anxious and having panic attacks to leading into depression and suicidal thoughts. I mean, that's quite accurate, is it?
Yeah. It started with panic attacks. I thought I was having a heart attack. I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And then it led on to anxiety. I then became anxious when I went to the hospital and the guy said, your heart's fine. You're having a panic attack. And I was like, oh my God. And it spiraled out of control. And I started having these horrific panic attacks where I just couldn't control my mind. I couldn't control my body. I became incredibly fearful of having another panic attack, and it became panic disorder. So I feared so much having a panic attack that I brought one on myself. And just with all of that going on, I failed my degree because it just got all so bad I couldn't get out of the car to get into my class. And that led to just the deepest depression that I've ever experienced. Yeah. But I know now that I was meant to feel that, because I think it's given me an empathy with my clients that they can come to me and tell me that they feel that way and we work through it.
Of course.
And I can say I know what it feels like to really seriously consider taking your own life. You know, I was there ready to do it, and the next thing I woke up and I was alive. I was like, oh no, thought I'd done it, but I hadn't. No. And I just woke up later, felt horrendous. Well, I did think I was dead to begin with. I was like, oh my God, am I dead? Is this what death is? Right. And I was like, oh no, I'm alive. But such a scary time of life. And cool. So many people are going through it alone.
So, I mean, what was causing the panic attacks at this? I mean, what was happening in your life to cause the panic attacks? Was you worried about things, stressing about things?
My parents split up. I'd had a relationship breakdown. Lots of things changed at the same time. And although I felt like I was managing them, I obviously wasn't. And I was going to college. I was still trying to stay busy with friends.
Sure.
And I wasn't talking to anybody. You know, it wasn't a time where you sort of think, right, okay, I need to go into therapy, these things have changed. Something just happened inside and I changed and I started having panic attacks.
Sure. And then that led into depression. I mean, so like, what was causing the depression then for you?
I think the depression was actually caused by the panic attacks and the anxiety, the fact that I was so fearful of having them.
Right.
The fact I couldn't control what was happening to me when I sort of thought, I'm quite with it. I know what I'm doing. You know, I'm getting a good education, things like that. And then it all just, you know, my parents had split up. I split up with my boyfriend and things started changing when I'd had such this secure time growing up. Everything changed overnight.
Sure.
And I think we try and stay strong, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's okay to need that help. And, sure. You know, I went to the doctors and the counselling and the CBT and stuff didn't help me. And that's when I went and found hypnotherapy.
Sure. And that's the thing that changed for you, hypnotherapy.
Yeah. Well, that... I just thought, I got to the point where I thought, nothing's going to work for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to end it because I can't cope. The panic attacks had started happening at different times. So I used to know when they were going to happen. It would be a specific outing or whatever I was going to do. But then they started creeping into my safe spaces.
Right.
So I'd feel safe at home or at someone's house or something. But then they were creeping into those areas. So I'd be having a panic attack at home.
Yeah. Why was that?
I don't know. I was so scared of having a panic attack. I was bringing one on with the fear.
Right. Got you.
So, you know, so it was difficult for me to accept that these panic attacks are actually just growing more and more,
sure,
and becoming more consuming. And it just led me into this depression. Panic attacks are awful. And anybody that's had one will know that they're bad. And I was having them. It felt almost all day, every day.
Right.
It got to. I was constantly on edge, and it's exhausting.
Sure. So for people again that's never had one or who's not too familiar, like, what's the kind of warning signs of a panic attack? Like, what's happening?
Well, the physical symptoms will range from, you know, feeling breathless, heart racing, palpitations. Start sweating, you can get blurry vision, you can get sort of tunnel hearing, you can feel weak, mm-hmm. could feel sick, your throat could seize up, you know, things like that. So they are the warning sign that is a panic attack.
Yeah.
And there are other symptoms. Everybody's is different. There's always a different combination of what affects somebody.
Yep.
So watch out. If you're having those symptoms, go and get yourself checked out. If not, there is therapy around to help you overcome those symptoms.
So you've gone through a stage of where you was dealing with panic attacks. They led on to depression. You contemplated taking your own life. You came very close to doing that. And then you decided to seek help.
I woke up and it was such a gloomy day. And the sun was shining on me. And I was like, this isn't it, is it then? Because obviously I thought I was dead. I woke up and I was like, this isn't it. The sun's on me. This is a sign. And... I knew somebody who'd had hypnotherapy before for anxiety, but they'd not followed it all through. So I knew this woman, and I went and got the Yellow Pages, as it was back then. There was no Google. So I phoned her up, and I'm sure I just screamed down the phone, say, I need help now. And she got me in, and, you know, it was just an amazing experience for me.
Sure.
How I went from, it took a few sessions, how I went from where I was to, I can remember leaving a session and I literally just felt like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders.
Brilliant.
The sun was shining, India Rari's Strength, Courage and Wisdom was playing in the car, and I just cried with happiness and release, because at that point I knew they'd gone.
Yeah.
I knew that I was free from the grips of this mental illness that I'd been suffering from. And which is why I knew the depression was linked to the panic attacks and anxiety, because that lifted as well.
Sure.
When the panic attacks and anxiety stopped, the depression lifted. And it was interesting. It was like, I didn't realize it was symptomatic of what I'd been dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of healing to go and do. I spent 5 years looking after myself. I spent 5 years using my hypnosis, using meditation. And I went and did a different job. And then it got to the point I was like, right, I'm ready. I'm healed enough now. 5 years later, I'm going to go and train to be a hypnotherapist.
Brilliant. And so then you spend your days now helping people in all different areas of their life.
As long as it's mental health related, then I will. That's what I do. I don't do flying. I don't do weight loss or smoking. Right. Just do mental illness.
Yeah, yeah. So what kind of cases do you deal with? Like, what's the kind of like who's coming to you for what?
People come to me for usually a selection of mental illness. So they'll have anxiety, panic attacks, or they'll have depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. They come with lots of stress. You know, people have had a lot of worry, lots of guilt, things sure. like that. And that's stuff that we can really work on in therapy.
Mm-hmm. So what's the general... what's the word I'm looking for? Like, so they come to see you, what's like, how long do they have? They have what, an hour, 2 hours?
They have an hour. I mean, I often overrun because I think sometimes the most important information comes out 5 minutes before the end of the session. So okay. for me, I think it's really important. I don't like clock watching. So I have space between my clients to know that if something really important is going to come up,
okay, yeah.
session, I want them to know that I'm not going to go, right, sorry, time's up now, bye. Gone. Which I know, like, I've had clients that come to me and they're watching the clock because they've been with another therapist and an alarm goes off in the therapy session.
Yeah.
I'm like, right, that's it. And they were like mid-sentence. And I don't do that. It's very, I'm very much laid back and... Yeah.
I
want to know that my client's got my 100% attention. I'm not constantly thinking about who's coming through the door next. Mm.
So in terms of how that looks, so they come to you. I mean, it's not like you, as we've just been talking earlier on about the TV hypnotist, you've not got a clock in your hand swinging it in front of the eyes saying, look at that Joe. There's nothing.
No, but if I had a pound for every time someone asks me, if I'm going to click my fingers or if I have a clock.
Yeah.
No.
You're going to make me act like a chicken in the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. I should have been collected.
what generally happens then? So, like, they'll come in, like, what's the kind of framework, the structure? I mean, what's the general process that you work with?
So, our initial assessment is just a really good chat, Not everything's going to come out in the first session, but they get to meet me. And I think that's really important to have a good therapeutic relationship with your therapist. You've got to feel safe and secure and heard. And so they get to meet me and I listen to what they've got to say. And we spend a lot of time doing that. I always do thought stopping in the first session, just to help them. I think it's really important that clients go away with something to do. Sure. They've got something to focus on after each session. And then the second session, we see how they've been that week. We have some time chatting again, and then we start to slowly introduce the hypnosis. And then that's the same as each session. We might do something else at the beginning of each session. I do EFT, which is emotional freedom technique, which is tapping around the body on specific points.
Sure.
I use havening, which is a really lovely therapeutic technique. We do fact and fiction. So anything I feel is required within that session, we do. I'm a solution-focused therapist, so I find solutions to problems. Some things going to work, some things aren't going to work. So let's try as much stuff as we possibly can so that when they finish their sessions with me, they've got a toolbox of things sure. that they can go, right, okay, today I'm going to do some EFT. Today sure. I'm going to do some thought stopping, or today I'm going to do some hypnosis. Mm-hmm. I like people to feel they've really got value for money.
Do you think that one of those things works better than others? Does tapping work better than timeline? Does hypnosis work better than does one work better than the other? Or?
I think the hypnosis works best for most of my clients. Mm. Well, all of my clients, they enjoy listening to the hypnosis. I have clients from years ago who, if I ever bump into them, they go, still listen to your hypnosis at night, So, that's lovely. And they still use it as a tool to keep themselves well. Um, it completely is dependent on the person. Some people like EFT, some people don't. Some people like thought stopping, some people don't. And I go, okay, well, let's just find out what really works for you and let's go with it.
So in terms of hypnosis, then we'll stick on that theme. I suppose a question that I imagine you've probably heard a million times is, can you make somebody do something against their own will?
No, and I wouldn't even know how to do that. I was never trained to get anybody to do anything against their own will. Yeah. It's completely unethical. Mm. When you train to be a hypnotherapist, well, when I was trained to be a hypnotherapist, there was never anything about that. So I wouldn't actually know how to make somebody do something against their own will. Nor would I actually even think about doing that. No. You know,
the reason I asked that is because for them to make this change, is that not in essence a certain thing that's going against their will, because they've embodied something as a belief that life is this certain way, so you've got to almost change their will towards that and in essence make them think about it differently. Is that not quite similar?
When they come to me, they're normally ready to make the change into healing. You know, they don't come and they go, well, I want to stay depressed or I want to stay anxious. I don't want to be this way anymore. I want to heal.
How much of that do you feel is part of the result is the fact that they've admitted that they need help?
Oh, massive. You know, if you don't want help, you're not gonna be open to accepting it, are you? You're going to be sort of, you know, saying that they're not ready. And you do get some people that come and they feel they're ready, but actually it's not the right time for them. And they need to go back and then come back again when the time is right for them. That's completely acceptable.
Right. So asking someone to get up and ask like move and walk around like a chicken.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I've never done that.
don't do that to a client. No. But I mean, like, I mean, is part of that acting, do you think, then? I mean, to come back to what we talked about earlier on, do you think that people that's doing that, because that is in violation of themselves, I suppose, isn't it?
I think when you watch the programs, they're all up for it, aren't they?
Yeah.
They all want to win the prize or.
So here's a question then. So they may be acting, but do you think they're aware that they've been so let me try and word this in a way that makes sense. So they might actually believe that they're not hypnotized and they're playing along with it, but the fact that they're playing along with it is a form of them being hypnotized.
I suppose it's you know, they tend to choose people that are suggestible.
Sure.
Really, you need to ask a stage hypnosis, because I've never researched it or looked into it, so I don't really know the answers. But you know, I do know that they look for people that are suggestible, that want to play along with it, that want to do things. Some people will have completely gone into hypnosis and done what the hypnotist has asked them to do, but I don't know. I haven't got the answers about stage hypnosis, unfortunately.
So I mean, because they used to use hypnosis, didn't they, to carry out surgery?
Yeah. Before. You can do that. The lady that trained me hypnotized herself to have had some surgery.
Yeah. And I remember reading about it, and it said that, like, before, like, medicine became a very profitable place to be, they used to use voodoo back in the day because they used to call it being mesmerized, because it was a guy called Mesmer, wasn't it, who invented it?
Yeah.
Or something along that kind of ilk.
People used to use it. But saying that, you know, I use it now for people with chronic pain, because, you know, that's quite psychological. So I've just started it a bit ago, a course where people who have got long-term chronic pain that isn't recoverable any other way, and you do that. So, you know, it's so interesting how the brain works, that they are able to heal their pain in their body through hypnosis, through meditation, through the mind.
Yeah, it's connected to themselves. I read a wonderful book recently called The Emotion Code, and I forget the author, I can find it out, but I remember reading that. And so he talks a lot about like energy healing. And one of the things that he says that they can cure pretty much anything, he says. He says like more or less anything. And he lists a long list of every ailment, every problem, every child, everything like that as well. And it says through energy healing, they just use a magnet. It says a fridge magnet will do it. And what they're doing is they're just recalibrating the energy fields within the body. And he uses, as an example, fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
He says, and we've had so many people that's come to us that suffered with this for years and years and years. And after one session, that's usually 5 minutes, completely cured, because they've done a bit of muscle testing. They found out where it is. They found the source of it all. They've run a magnet over the area. They've recalibrated it. And he says, and they're cured.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something that hypnosis could do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to do it in one session, you can work with fibromyalgia, with hypnosis. I really, truly believe you can heal so much through the mind. Mm. And, you know, depression is just such an absolutely devastating illness to have. You know, people don't talk about it. It's still underground quite a lot, but you know, people can really heal with using the mind. But you know, we go to the doctors, people think hypnosis is this fandangle therapy that is strange and stay away from it, but it's older than the new medicine that's brought out. You know, people are on fluoxetine and sertraline. Hypnosis has been around for so much longer than those medicines.
So I mean, in terms of hypnosis then, to bring this into a landing then, like, could you, in essence, could you say that you can put somebody into an hypnotic state and suggest that they stop being lazy and they go and work 10 hours a day incredibly hard and change their life?
Well, I wouldn't say that, because I think it would be slightly unethical, unless that's absolutely what they wanted to do. If they actually came into it, they coming in and telling me that?
As a side note, working 10 hours a day doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be successful. That's just a side note into that. You can be successful doing an hour a day. But let's just be, let's play with this a little bit. And let's just say, so they're going to come into you and say, listen, Charlotte, the problem that I think I've got is I'm lazy. So, you know, I don't work very hard. I probably only work 2 hours a day out of the 8 that I should be working. I know that I could be much more productive if I could work 8 hours straight or 10 hours straight. Can you hypnotize me and put me into an hypnotic state and tell me to stop being lazy and work 8 hours solid without being a lazy ass? Could you do it?
I mean, you would have a look around. There's no easy answer to this. You would have a look around and find out why they have these thoughts to begin with. Okay. And then work around that, find out what they really want, who they really are. You know, do they want to do that? Why do they feel lazy? Is that something that they've been told that they are since being a child? You know, where has this belief come from?
Right.
You know, sometimes beliefs are very strong and people do sort of believe what they've been told growing up. And so we have to create our new beliefs and then find out what we really want. And if they want to, if when we've figured that out and gone through that and have had a bit more, you know, self-love, you know, I'm not lazy, you know, I'm powerful and strong, using some really great affirmations, I'm energized and productive.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if they want, then I think if they want to work more, that will probably come naturally. But I probably wouldn't put in the suggestion that you're going to work 8 hours straight. I think so, I would sort of work on the why.
Let's use a different scenario then. So I'm going to come to you and I'm going to say, Charlotte, I really need some help. I think I'm addicted. I know I'm addicted to social media. Like, that phone's glued to my hand. I can't leave it. It's there all the time. Do you know, can you hypnotize me and tell me to put my phone down and never look at it again?
I would use some more conscious suggestions, such as thought stopping, which is a band on your wrist. So every time you think about picking up your phone, you snap the band on the inside of your wrist. Yeah. You know, some people love that technique, some people don't. You know, I've worked with it for 9 years and it's always been a really successful technique. To become mindful of how often you're picking your phone up, because, you know, social media is very habitual, isn't it, at the moment. People don't know that they're picking their phone up, and the next thing they know, they're on, you know, Facebook or another site, looking through things, spending hours and hours. So I think it's allowing your brain to become aware that's become habitual, to stop the habit. And then, you know, do things like set a time limit on your phone. Right. I would then use hypnosis to say, you know, let's focus on other interests. Let's just have some time, you know, be out in nature and things like that. Do things that, find out what they prefer to do over social media, because a lot of the time people actually don't really overly enjoy being on social media all the time.
Sure. Well, okay. Okay.
It can be quite a depressing place.
So it's a habit. We know it's a habit. They're in the habit of picking the phone up because they're probably bored, or, you know, they're looking for some kind of stimulation, because we know that it makes you feel good when you get a like or an email. So they're looking for more stimulation. We know that's a habit. Someone's fallen into the habit of being lazy is a habit. So would you say that a large proportion of what you do is picking away at what's driving those habits?
Yeah, massively so. Lots of things are habitual. We don't even realise that they are. You know, saying sorry to people all the time is habitual. You know, you have lots of people that are constantly, oh, I'm sorry. And you know, it's just a habit, you know. And sometimes we don't, thinking negative thoughts can become habitual as well, can't they? You know, we automatically go to a negative thought. Right, let's break the habit. Let's go to positive affirmation. That's where we add in affirmations. Okay, so instead of going to a negative thought, let's go to something positive instead.
Understand. So why do you think that we are so drawn to the negativity? Because that's the reality, is that negativity is like Velcro, positivity is like Teflon. Do you know, the positivity just slides straight off, whereas the Velcro, the negativity is going to stick. Why? I mean, like, we learn from negativity though, don't we? Do you think that's what it is? Do you think we're hardwired to look for negative experiences to learn from them? Do you think that's why we are so drawn to negativity?
I think as a child, we're all born without negativity. We're all born without fear, aren't we? Yeah, a client once said to me years ago, she says, you know, children are born knowing everything, but we spend our life in teaching them. And I think that is so true, because we do. You know, someone asked me the other day, who do you find inspirational? I was like, nobody really. Probably dogs and children, because actually they know how to live life. Mm-hmm. They're present. They're very in the moment. Mm-hmm. They stamp and scream to get what they want. They don't focus on what they don't want, do they? But we grow up focusing a lot on what we don't want, mm-hmm. I think, as a society, mm-hmm. whereas we should be, you know, connected to what makes us happy.
I agree.
But we learn a lot. We learn from parents or teachers or the TV. I mean, goodness me, the soaps on the TV are so unbelievably depressing. You know, I think lots of people really indulge in those and don't feel good.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, why don't we watch something nice? Let's sort of connect with ourselves and remember to figure out who we are. Okay. And I think we spend a lot of time at school becoming the same person as everybody else. You know, we're just molded into, you know, you've got to do English, math, science. You know, they're scrapping things like art and creativity and music. Yeah. So we lose a sense of who we are as a very young child when we want to be in a band or we want to be an artist or something. But then we have to be somebody else that we're not. And I think that then leads into a life of uncertainty as to who we are. And I think that brings a lot of negativity out in people when they don't actually know who they are. They're a name, they're an age, they're a gender, a job title. And we feel lost. And I think that brings a lot of personal negativity. And, you know, we are like magnets, aren't we? You know, we take from people, we give from people how we are feeling internally.
Mm. And yeah, totally. I mean, massively so. School's got a lot to answer for, hasn't it, really?
Yeah, there's a really good TED talk called School in the Clouds that is just opens your eyes up to how we should be teaching children.
Sure. I know. I always remember I use this all the time in the seminars. In fact, you've seen it when you've been along as well. But one of the things that I say to people all the time is that if you took a classroom full of 4, 5, 6-year-olds and said to the children, who's the fastest runner in the class?
Yeah.
Everyone's hand would be up.
Mm.
You know, you ask that same class, you say to them, do you know, who's the best singer in this class? Everyone's hands would be up. Who's the best dancer? Everybody's hands would be up. But you go back to that same class when they get to the ages of 9 and 10, and you ask them, who's the fastest in the class? They'll point to somebody.
Yeah.
Who's the best dancer? They'll point to somebody. Who's the best dancer? They'll point to somebody. They've already had that self-confidence and belief and curiosity and everything else being dragged out of them from such an early age.
It's so sad, you know, and it's like they really tell us what they want. It's like dogs. My dog's 7 now. He still thinks and has the positivity that I'm going to feed him something off my plate. In 7 years, he's never given up on that hope.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we're the same, be more jog. I'm like, we should really just never give up on what we want and go for it. It always comes to the bin.
Yeah.
Oh, something's going to fall this time. And it never does, but next time he's going to try again. And I just love that.
They call that tenacity, don't they?
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Charlotte, it's been absolutely wonderful speaking with you. We could quite easily, like, chatter away here for hours.
Yes.
To pieces and looking at it in different lights. It's been really good. Charlotte, is there anything that I've not asked you about what you do that you think would be really kind of favourable for people that's listening?
You know, I'd like to say that people that doubt other treatments like hypnotherapy, give it a go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a beautiful technique, even trying some meditation or something.
Sure.
You know, sometimes we need to get rid of our name, our age, our gender, our job title, and really look at who we are without those titles.
Yeah.
Hypnotherapy is a beautiful way to recover from mental illness. And, you know, if you doubt it, you know, give a hypnotherapist a call wherever you are. Find somebody that you really like and connect with and go for it. Everybody's worth it. Everybody can heal. I've worked with people who were just really suicidal, really unwell, and they're better. They've got married. They've had babies. They've gone and got their dream job. And we worked through that healing time, and everybody is worth it. Everybody is worth a chance. Everybody's worth healing.
Absolutely wonderful. And I don't know who it was who said it. I think it might have been on The Secret. And we're a fan of The Secret, aren't we?
We are big fans. Yeah.
But I think it was on The Secret, and it says that you've got to look at the word incurable. Do you know, if you've got an incurable disease, well, look at the word. It means incurable. It means you're curable from within.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And I think that just kind of really kind of solidifies and like really kind of hammers home the stuff that you've been talking about on this podcast, which is, you know, we have the answers within ourselves. You know, we can cure ourselves, we can make ourselves better. Sometimes we just need that encouragement.
Absolutely. Sometimes we just need someone to guide us gently into that healing, because if we don't know, we don't know, do we?
No.
But if there's somebody there that can actually help you and guide you into your own therapeutic healing, mm-hmm. then go for it.
Yeah. Wonderful. Charlotte, absolutely incredible. Charlotte, where can people find out more about what it is that you do and how you help other people? Like, where can they go to?
You can go to my website, which is www.info@whitewillow.co.uk. No, that's wrong.
I know what you meant, though.
white-willow.co.uk.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You can email me on that email address I just gave you.
It's not going to work. We can email you as well, though. Yeah, try it. Wonderful, Charlotte. Brilliant. Thank you so much. That's been incredible. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you.
Good stuff.